Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And this is episode number 137. We are talking about the Red Pyramid chapters 29 and 30 today, and catching up a little bit because we skipped a week, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's been a little extra break. It was a 3-week break because Kristen decided to go to Maine.
Yeah. I mean, how dare you? But it sounds like you had fun.
It was such a good time.
That's great.
It really only rained one day.
Okay.
And that was, like, the first Saturday we were there, And we kind of knew it was going to be rainy that day, so we planned to have, like, a nothing day where we just kind of relax and whatever.
It's good, too, when you first get to a place to just kind of, like, chill for a little bit, too, because I get, like, overwhelmed sometimes traveling and all
Absolutely,
of that.
Yeah. Definitely. But, yeah, so we had pretty good weather. It wasn't super hot. It was, like, 68, 70s every day, so
ideal.
It was really beautiful. We went whale watching, and I saw a whale. I saw a finback whale, which is the second largest mammal in the world.
Okay.
The blue whale is the biggest.
Right.
Finbacks are just smaller than a blue whale, and those are the ones we saw. And I have a picture. I have three pictures. Two, you can see, like, a back just barely breaking the water, and this is not close by any means. It's pretty far in the distance. And then the third one, you can kind of see the little fin popping out of the water, but, like, these giant whales have this teeny tiny little fin. It's, like, maybe this tall out of the water.
That's
just, like,
funny.
Yeah. But it was so cool. I was so excited. There was, like, an inside and an outside to the boat. Like, there was an inside part that had walls that you could, like, be in if you were cold, because we were going full speed out almost the whole way. And so we kind of stayed inside while we were trudging out toward, like, the whales. And then at one point, I kind of went and stood outside because I was really excited and just wanted to. And oh my god, it was so cool to just, like, stand on the edge of a boat, hold onto the railing, and just look at this endless ocean in front of you. It was so cool. Anyway. But yeah, I wasn't, like, the first person on the boat to spot it, but I was pretty close because it was on our side that it popped up.
Yeah.
And you could see, like, the blow from the blowhole first.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, like, how you spotted them because all of a sudden you see this. And
it's like water.
Then you know where to look.
Yeah.
So, because otherwise it's just waves cresting, and you're like, was that a back? Was that something? Like, which shiny was that? Was that water shiny, or was that, like, mammal shiny? But yeah, it was so cool. And we are definitely, Alex had a great time as well, my husband. So we are definitely whale watching people.
Yeah.
And I may have said, like, if we ever go anywhere, like, tropical, I want to try and find, like, a whale watching, because they usually, like, breed in warm waters, so, like, they're all there at once kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then they spend, like, a lot of whales spend time in colder water when they're just, like, feeding and that sort of thing. So I'm intrigued. I also have heard that Alaskan whale watching tours are insane.
Mm.
You just see so much.
I really want to go to Alaska sometime. Everybody that I've heard talking about it just says it's, like, breathtaking, and it's just, like, a really cool trip.
There was a family kind of sitting right across from us in the boat, and it was, like, a grandparent, set of grandparents, and then a mom and her kid, and they were from Missouri, and the grandparents said that they had been to Alaska, and they were like, it was crazy how much we got to see, just because there's just so much going on up there. She was like, yeah, if you ever, like, this was a fun trip, but, like, they don't guarantee you're going to see anything.
Right.
And they say, like, you know, we'll do our best, but, you know, there's nothing out there.
They're wild animals. Like, you can't control
them. Right, exactly. We were a little shocked they don't use anything to, like,
lure them in.
Well, not even, like, you know, I watch a lot of National Geographic and things in my time. And, like, even noises will attract them to the boat. So even not even, like, baiting them with fish or stuff like that. Because that would be, feels mean. I don't know. There have been studies and stuff that, like, certain sounds will attract them or whatever, and I'm kind of shocked they don't use anything to try and lure them to the boat. It's just these guys going out to where they know they've seen them before,
I wonder if they're not allowed to because it might disrupt their normal, like, patterns and stuff. And depending on how often they go out, like, they probably wouldn't want to do that all the time.
I mean, while we were there, it was once a day. Mm. And then they said, like, sometime in the middle of June, they start doing twice a day tours. Oh, okay. So, like, it's often.
Yeah, that's probably.
Yeah, but it was a really cool experience doing the whale watching. And the rest of our trip was really, really fun. We ate a lot of yummy things.
Did you try the crab rolls?
I tried the lobster roll.
Lobster roll, yeah.
I did the warm one. I did not end up trying the cold one. I do not get the hype.
Okay.
I tried it. It was buttery, which was always good in my book.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just, I don't know. It was very fresh. We found a 5-star stand at, like, a small town. So, oh, like, we didn't get it from a restaurant. We tried to do it right. Like,
yeah.
These are the people who know what they're doing. And this place had, 5 stars, whatever. And it just, it was fine. It was totally fine. And it was on, like, the split top roll.
Right,
and,
yeah.
You know. It just was not, like, anything stand out to me.
Yeah.
And then, and my husband tried it, too, because he's not a big shellfish eater either. And then we get back to the room that night, and he has little white, little red bumps
no,
all down his arms.
He's allergic.
Yeah. I think it had to be the lobster. We, like, ran through in our minds, like, did we do anything else different today? Like, he wore sunblock, but, like, he's worn that sunblock before. And he used all of his products, like, his normal stuff. And we ran through all kinds of things trying to figure out what it was. And I was like, you ate lobster for the first time. And he's like, oh my gosh. Like, he's had shrimp before and stuff like that. And I don't think he's ever had a reaction, but he may be allergic to lobster.
Yeah. Wow.
So he's like, I may ask my doctor about that the next time I'm in, if they have a test for that or something. Just
I know. I would assume so.
Because it wasn't extreme. I said, thank goodness it wasn't extreme because some people have very violent reactions to shellfish.
That would have ruined his trip.
I'm stranded in small town, like, this literally was a beach town. It wasn't like a little New England town, like harbor town. This was a amusement park on the beach.
Oh.
Fair food the entire length of the street, like, big kind of beach town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I really don't want to have to try and navigate healthcare here. Like, no. But he was fine. He's totally fine. It didn't even itch that bad, but he was like, yeah, that's really weird. Like, why do I have little bumps all down my arms? I was like, I'm pretty sure those are hives, honey. But yeah. So it was a great trip. I had a lot of fun. We will probably be back because we really enjoyed Maine. And there are other things that we definitely didn't get to.
Yeah.
so many things to do. And you just can't fit it all in one trip.
Yeah. I feel like when we've gone on vacation to places, like when we went out west to like Zion and stuff, it's like, this was a really good little slice of what you can do here. But like, you could go back and spend the same amount of days doing, you know, nothing you did the first time.
Yeah.
Like, there's just always so much to see, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. We didn't touch the art museum. We saw the one lighthouse from the boat when we went whale watching.
Yeah.
But there's, like, a massive I think they call it Headlight is the name of the lighthouse that is, like, in Portland that they say you have to go see, and we did not make it out there. We had a whole bunch of stuff that we were like, oh, look, we're going to try and do this, and we'll do this. But, yeah, it just didn't get done.
Yeah.
There's a donut in Portland that they swear by, and we tried them, and we were not fans. It's called a potato donut.
Okay.
I had never heard of this. It's called, the store is called the Holy Donut.
Oh.
They are all over the place. Like, there's multiple locations, but it's a well-known entity, and they've been making these forever, and they are, you know, people give them all kinds of rave reviews. We were not huge fans. I don't know why that is, but we tried them.
Was it the texture?
The texture was a little weird. It just wasn't very sweet.
Mm.
Like, you expect a donut to be sweet.
Right.
And it was very, like, bready, and, yeah, just a little different. Very, very different. So, we had lots of great food. The donuts and the lobster roll were the two things that we were just kind of like, this is weird.
Yeah.
But
hey, you tried something new. That's
we did. We did. Tried a few new things.
Yeah. My last couple of weeks were much less exciting than yours. I was also out on a boat recently. My boyfriend's parents have a place on a like a private lake. And so we went out. We actually went swimming. It really wasn't warm enough for swimming. And I got a sunburn, which is unfortunate. But it was a fun day. I like going there. And other than that, not really been up to a whole lot other than trying to finish one book and start another one. Writing, not reading. although reading, also having trouble finishing books. And then I start new ones. And I'm like, I have 7 I could finish right now, literally. And I'm pretty just much. Like, I just don't want to, so.
I have a couple that are sitting there unfinished. I probably have, like, 2 chapters left, and I'm like, why have I not finished
that? Yeah. Sometimes it's just like, I don't know. Yeah.
I have no explanation for it.
It happens.
I do not understand this thing, but it's a thing.
Yeah. But, hey, I mean, there's one book where pretty much guaranteed to finish.
Yeah.
And that's going to be The Red Pyramid. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
If you would like to contact us to talk to us about your trips to Maine and eating lobster rolls and whales and
how wrong I am about the Holy Donut.
Yeah. And books and boats and, I don't know, various other things, including Percy Jackson, you can do so at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We, I don't know if anybody else will notice this. Kristen and I usually trade off news and chapters, and we got a little mixed up because we've both been busy.
Yes.
And so I'll be doing the news again, even though I did it last time, and Chris will be doing chapters again. But, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
But just in case you were like, wait a second. This seems off.
Yeah.
I doubt anybody would have noticed, to be perfectly honest. But I felt like I needed to own up to that. We do have a handful of news to go over today. Some, like, pretty cool stuff. I did post some things to our story on Instagram, and I gotta start, like, saving the posts so that I can go back and make sure we talk about it on the podcast, because I was like, I know I posted, like, 6 things to our story, and I don't remember what they all are, so I probably missed some stuff. If I did, you can always write into us, and we can discuss it. But I wanted to talk about Rick's Pride post on Instagram, which I really loved and is, like, actually pretty relevant to what we're talking about now. He posted this a week ago, and he said, in honor of Pride, here's a nice Psychology Today post about gender fluidity and intersexuality in myths around the world, reminding us that gender and sexuality have been understood as spectrums for the entirety of human history. And then he links to it, and I'll link to his Instagram post in our show notes. And then he says, pictured mirror images of Hapi, the androgynous Egyptian god of Nile flooding, usually shown with ceremonial beard and swollen breasts and belly, which I really love that that's, like, a part of Egyptian mythology.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you want to read some of Rick's books for Pride, I mean, a lot of them have queer characters and stuff like that. I always think of Alex from Magnus Chase. That was, like, honestly one of the first kind of gender fluid people that I had ever read about, which was, like, really fascinating to me when I first picked up that series. And, of course, you got Nico and all of his books and a lot of other Piper now, yes, too, and a lot of other characters in his books. So I just really love that amidst all of the conversation about trans rights and stuff like that, him talking specifically about gender fluidity and intersexuality during Pride Month made me really happy.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Rick, for doing that. Also, I only saw this, I think, today. I don't remember seeing this the other day when I was going through stuff. But Percy Jackson and the Olympians, A Guide to God and Monsters, is out now. It is 128 pages,
And the synopsis says, fans of Percy Jackson and the Olympians on Disney Plus will devour this essential guide to the gods, monsters, and creatures from the show, based on the beloved number one New York Times bestselling series by Rick Riordan. Ever wonder if you have what it takes to go head-to-head with the gods and monsters of Percy Jackson's world? This complete compendium contains everything you need to know about those you may encounter on your journey. From gods, Ares isn't the only one you want to steer clear of, to monsters, like the terrifying Echidna and her children. This guide, written by Camp Half-Blood director Chiron, will show you the ropes, perfect for fans of the new Disney Plus series and longtime readers alike. So it sounds like specifically we will be talking about the ones in the show, which we've talked about before when the show first came out. And there were a few things that we were like, what is that exactly that might be different from what was in the book?
Yeah.
And this, as far as I can tell, I'm pretty sure is not a repeat of the Percy Jackson...
Gods and Monsters.
Well, it's Gods... Greek gods.
Oh, Greek gods and Greek heroes.
Yeah.
That's
yep. Yeah. So that is, you know, this is completely different. It is, like I said, it's out now. It's 128 pages, which is not nothing. I mean, that's not probably with like lots of pictures and stuff. I feel like this could be a really cool thing. If you've picked this up, let us know how you feel about it. It has 3 5-star reviews on Amazon right now. And it's only like $13, which to me really isn't bad.
It is not written by Rick.
Ah, okay.
Or at least it does not appear as such.
Yeah.
About the author underneath it says it's written by Stephanie True Peters.
Okay.
She's a freelance children's book writer. It looks like she loves Greek mythology, so my guess is Disney Books reached out to her and said, hey, so my guess is that, yeah, it's kind of with Rick's blessing, I would imagine.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
if she's writing from Chiron's point of view, like, that's
right.
his character. So
yeah.
My guess is, yes, this is done with his blessing, but he didn't have time for it. So.
Right, yeah.
But it's so cool.
I'm curious, too, like, because it doesn't show the inside of the book. Like, I would hope that there are, like, some really cool illustrations or, like, photographs, but I guess we don't know that for sure. So I'd be curious what it looks like on the inside. I also find it really funny that I always tend to look at like what categories the books are in.
Yeah.
And this is number 2 in children's historical fiction on ancient civilizations, number 26 in children's spine-chilling horror, and number 28 in children's Greek and Roman tales and myths.
I mean, I guess some of these monsters are scary.
I mean, yeah. that's not the category I would have put it in, but
nope.
I guess I get the connection.
Yeah. I wouldn't have either, but...
Yeah. So if you've picked this up, let us know. I'm really curious what it looks like. I'll probably get it at some point just to add to my collection, but I'm in the midst of redoing my bookcases. I've done one. I need to do the big one, which has all my Percy Jackson stuff on it, and I might wait until that's a little bit settled. Don't look at it with that face, Kristen. That's a face of horror.
That it's not horror. It's just that is a lot...
It's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of books.
I love books.
I know. It's so hard.
It is really hard. And I've gone through them. Like, some of those books over there are textbooks from college. And,
yeah.
like, I've gone through them.
Yep.
And decided multiple times, no, I want to keep this.
Yes.
It's just hard to get rid of stuff
when
you love
it. We've purged books many times
yeah.
in our day.
Yeah.
This is not a new process.
My current pile of Purge books, which is sitting next to us that Kristen needs to go through after the podcast, there's 81 sitting there.
Jeez.
Yeah, and I still have a fairly full bookshelf behind it full of books.
Yeah.
So.
It's at least 2 rows deep on at least
yeah.
one shelf. So.
But, you know, that's what happens when you get books for free for 10 plus years, is you tend to collect quite a few of them.
You do. You hold on to them. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
There is a Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters TV show tie-in novel, just like they did with The Lightning Thief, which had the trident on it. This one has the poster that we talked about last time on the front of it. And Rick specifically says, same novel, new look, with pictures from the show, apparently, will be released November 11th before the debut of the second season.
So there may be a trip to Barnes & Noble in which I go see what pictures are in this book.
Yes.
I'm sure they will be things that have been previously released, because that sounds about right. Yeah. But on the off chance that there's a new photo or something, I will probably
I liked what they did with the other one, you know, having the pictures in there. Because if it's just a new cover, like...
Yeah,
I'm probably going to buy it because I have a problem. But, like, it makes it a little bit better when there's, like, something else added to it. Or I love when authors do, like, bonus chapters or, like, some weird, like, you know, random interview with a character at the end of the book. Like, those are always really fun and gives you a little bit something else to kind of hold on to.
Definitely.
Speaking of books, we've got two Rick Riordan Presents authors who have stuff coming out soon. Roseanne A. Brown, friend of the podcast, has a new series coming. I'm really excited about this. The first book is called By Divine Rage, and it is the first in an adult romantic fantasy duology. A young woman raised to fend off eternal winter by marrying a god must decide if her future lies as a sacrifice for the greater good or among the realm of fiend-wielding warlocks she was raised to destroy out spring 2027.
That sounds fantastic.
I'm super excited. You know what? Duologies are underrated because you get... the, like, thrill of a series of another book coming without, like, oh, there's going to be 10 more that I need to read, which I always find kind of fun.
Well, and as much as I love a saga, I love a long series. Mm-hmm. I mean, those can be fantastic. Sometimes you don't have time to read a whole 5 or 10 or 12 book series. Like, sometimes you just want 2 books or 3 books. And so that's where duologies and trilogies really just, And again, duologies are kind of... There's not very many of them.
Yeah.
We've seen more in the Rick Riordan Presents world than I think I've ever seen elsewhere. Most of the time, it's a three-book series.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see duologies kind of have their moment again, and very excited to see what Roseanne does with this.
Yeah, I mean, debut adult romantic fantasy, like, this is...
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Love that for her. Definitely want to read this.
Thumbs up for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And another one, which is, like, very similar, but, like, a little not, because if you've read anything by Roshni Chokshi, you know she writes fantastic stories that, to me, are always, like, a little bit left of center. This one's called The Swan's Daughter, A Possibly Doomed Love Story, which I thought was a really interesting subtitle to this.
Oh, yeah.
And it got a cover reveal recently. This book comes out January 6th, 2026. It is a YA fantasy romance, and the cover is beautiful.
I was going to say, it gives... like, high fantasy.
Yeah.
It gives that impression, yeah. Very pretty, very pretty.
And I love the colors. I'm sure you do, too, because it's purple.
It is purple.
And just the illustration and stuff, I think, is, like, really, really pretty. So she always writes really interesting stuff, and I can't remember the title of it right now, but the other, like, adult fairy tale... Yes. One that she wrote, which was, like, a little twisted.
Yeah.
That one was really good. And, like, she makes me want to be a better writer with the way that she describes things. She's incredible.
I bought that one. I own it. I want to read it. Yeah. I just keep getting inundated with new things and other things. And, ooh, this looks flashy. And I could read that really fast. And then I'll get to this other thing.
Yeah.
So, but, no, that is on the list of books I really want to read because I want to see what she does with an adult book. Because, again, we loved her middle grade stuff with Arisha. So,
yeah.
Very, very excited to see what she does with an adult story.
Yeah, she's really fantastic, so definitely also looking forward to that. And I know there are a few other things out there floating at the moment that we haven't talked about yet. It's just been a little bit difficult to kind of gather everything, especially with, like, not being on social media as consistently. I don't see things, like, as they come up, and then it's like, oh, this book released a month ago? Like, totally missed that, so...
I gotta say, it really has... It's impacted my life more than I thought, giving up Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I hate what Twitter has become. Don't want it back, whatever. But if I could have Twitter back from its heyday, I got so much, like, book update news and, like, I knew my authors would pop up if they had new stuff to tell us, and I just love, it was such a good resource. It was such an easy way.
It felt more like a community, and even though, like, Instagram is my preferred one now, Instagram to me feels a little scattered. Like, it doesn't feel as, I know there's definitely communities on there, and that you can kind of cultivate, like, your own group, but it has always felt a little bit, like, too big for me, whereas Twitter was, like, much easier to, like, keep up with your friends and stuff. Like, I used to do that instead of going on Facebook, and now...
Same.
Yeah. All that being said, I don't want any of it back. I am in such a better place mentally because I am not, like, sucked into all of that stuff, so...
Like, I still probably check my Facebook the most often because there's a lot of writers' groups and stuff in there, so it's pretty... It's my little corner of Facebook as opposed to, like, the scary hellscape that exists in the rest of it. Honestly, getting away from a large portion of social media has helped me too.
Yeah.
I definitely know that. I remember when Twitter was so lovely and light and fun and everyone was supportive and it was so lovely and it couldn't last forever, unfortunately.
It's still shocking to me because I used to know about, not all of the pop culture stuff, but definitely like the big pop culture stuff before like any of my other like regular friends, not like you, because you know, we've both worked at Hypebol and stuff, but like my friends who don't really pay attention to that stuff, I would always be like, here are the list of trailers of new movies you need to watch and all that stuff. And now it's like all of a sudden, this movie's coming out next week. I didn't even know they were making it. Like, I missed the announcement. That's still been weird for me because I used to really stay up to date on that stuff and now I am so out of the loop, but...
A fun place to go for trailers. My husband loves watching movie trailers. I could give or lose them. I know what's coming out. Usually I'm constantly looking for what's coming out new or whatever. And so I always know what it is. I don't need to watch a trailer if it's something I'm going to go see anyway. If it's something I've never heard of, yes, I want to watch the trailer for that. He watches all the trailers all the time, and so I've seen more trailers these days than I normally would.
Yeah.
If you have, like, the Apple Store on the app or whatever in your, whatchamacallit, for, like, the actual, like, library store, like, for the movies and stuff, if you kind of scroll down, they have a trailer section that is literally just new trailer after new trailer, and they all kind of front-heavy. Like, all the newer stuff is toward the front. So, like, you just kind of keep going till you've seen something. Then you're like, oh, okay, that's where I left off last.
Yeah.
It's been very helpful for me.
Good to know.
To kind of catch up on what's coming out that I've missed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, friendly trailer spot. Easy to find because YouTube will bury you with 25 of the same trailer. It's like, okay, I understand that movie's coming out, but I want to see if anything else is, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I really liked that. It was a fun find.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I guess it's time to discuss the Red Pyramid. We're doing chapters 29 and 30. We're not quite at the end, but we are definitely getting closer and closer to this final confrontation with Set. And I gotta say, I did enjoy these two chapters. They were a little bit more straightforward, a little bit less, like, information heavy, I feel like.
Yeah.
Which was really nice, especially when you're trying to read them last minute.
I was gonna say, 29 definitely felt a little more like a transitional chapter. Mm-hmm. 30 has a little more going on in it, definitely toward the end. But yeah, these were less info dump heavy than we've had recently, so.
Yeah.
These are fun. They're fun chapters. Okay, so we're gonna start with chapter 29, entitled Zia Sets a Rendezvous. I loved that this chapter started with Carter being like, well, Sadie got to tell you all about the underworld, and now I get to tell you all about our drive through Interstate 10 in Texas.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it was boring. It was super boring. But I thought it was hilarious that we got the exact time that they left New Orleans. I felt like it was important to mark.
Mm.
So they left New Orleans at 1 a.m. on 12/28, which is the day before Set is planning to destroy the world. And they are in an RV that Bast borrowed from FEMA.
She's so good at borrowing things.
It was left over from Katrina.
Yeah.
So she didn't steal a FEMA RV that was needed at that exact moment. It was left behind. don't
Because I think, because you put a note in here, like, what year was this book published?
It was a note for myself to look up, and I completely forgot to go back and look it up. So thank you, Karen, for doing my research for me. Yeah. I appreciate you. Yeah, Katrina was in 2005. This book was published in 2010.
Yeah, so about 5 years. Yeah.
So it was in a kind of an abandoned RV, but it still ran, and that's what they needed.
Yeah. And also, Carter specifically says that, like, even though they were supposed to have safe travels through the sky as far as, like, Memphis, they didn't want to test it, like, beyond that, especially because of his, like, dream vision thing where he...
The plane fell apart.
Yeah, exactly. And I just love that Rick usually finds a way to make it so his characters can't get on a plane, which honestly is, like, a very good thing to throw into a book, because if you get on a plane... Up, down, you're done. Only a couple hours go by. Not much can happen, really. Yeah. Whereas if you're in a car or you have to walk or do something, like, it does add more opportunity for things to happen. And so I'm like, I see what you're doing there, Rick.
What's the opposite of a deus machina? Like, it's like it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
Because he specifically creates a moment where you can't use this device to just jump ahead in your story. It's literally the opposite.
Yeah.
Which makes me laugh. But yes, so they are driving. And we already know that Set isn't the only problem that they have. We know that the magicians are closing in on them. And Bast kind of makes a point to remind Carter, like, you've got your eyes set on Set and the ending of the world and, like, here we go. But we've got the magicians hot on our tail and, like, we have to be, you know, they could do just as much damage here as Set if they catch up with us at the wrong point. So, worth noting. Carter also lets us in on his theory about Desjardins. I don't think we got any real hint of this in the last chapter. I think he mentioned, starts a sentence and gets cut off. And this was, like, what was going on in Carter's head during that. He tells us that, like, he feels like Desjardins would be the perfect host for Set. Not only does Desjardins want to crush the Canes, but he also, now that he's chief lector, he has the power, the anger, the arrogance, the ambition. Like, he's got all of that at his fingertips now, and he didn't quite have it before. And so now he's kind of this seething ball of power that if Set were to use him would be kind of the worst case scenario for humanity, but the best case scenario for Set.
Yeah.
It would also definitely start a war between the gods and magicians. It's kind of already in motion, but, like, if Set were to use Desjardins in that way, it would definitely throw a divide where there's no going back from that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, on the other hand, Carter also says Desjardins helped save all those people on that plane, and he has a hard time justifying that Desjardins with the one who would want to end the world. Like,
yeah.
if you're on board with letting, you know, Set use you, then why would you be saving a plane full of innocent humans?
So, I guess a two-part question for you then.
Okay.
Do you think that Desjardins is involved with Set in any way? And if so, do you think that, because we know that the kids can kind of control their godly things inside of them.
Yes.
So who's to say Desjardins isn't doing that too? So, like, maybe he doesn't quite want the world to end, but, like, he's kind of aligned with some of Seth's stuff, but that's why he saved the people? Like, where are you falling on what you think he's actually up to?
I think, personally, Desjardins feels like old school kind of, he likes the old way of doing things, and he's so anti them having these gods hosted in their bodies that I can't see him wanting to be the exception to his own rule.
Yeah.
Like, I see why Carter says this, and it's worth noting that, like, this could absolutely be terrible, but I feel like Desjardins has strong enough beliefs that he's not just going to let Set use him if at all, if he can at all help it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't necessarily think Desjardins is in on the Set plan. He is trying to go by the playbook they've been going by for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And it's not a great playbook at this point. Like, you doing that is just going to cause the end of the world. It's going to cause what they're trying to avoid. But he thinks they can put it back in the bottle.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you know,
he's not willing to admit that it's not a good playbook.
Exactly. And he's in a little bit of denial, and I think that's more or less where he sits. Not that he's up for chaos taking over. Like,
right.
Yeah. In case you were wondering, Bast and Khufu were on driving duty, and they were taking turns so that Carter and Sadie could nap because they need their rest.
And that I makes love sense. That it's like, yes, let's let the two, essentially two animals drive, but then again, like, or the two children, they don't really have much of a choice.
I was going to say, at this point, Khufu's probably more qualified.
I mean, probably, yes.
Bast? I don't know. Has she driven much?
I mean, she's borrowed several vehicles at this point, but her driving has left a lot to be desired,
yeah.
So...
She's a quick study.
You know what? I'm on board. I would probably follow Khufu.
Right.
Yeah.
And my guess is Khufu gives her a few pointers while they're... while he's driving, and hopefully they'll make it. Bast, also worth noting, Bast is anxious. When she's not driving, she's scratching up the upholstery, she's, you know, picking at the kitchen table. She can feel the tension of what's lying ahead.
Yeah.
And is feeling it for sure. Carter decides that he feels this distance that Sadie's been putting between them since they left the underworld, and we know why. We know it's because of the truth, the feather of truth, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And that she, you know, has to be very careful about what truths she tells. She can't tell lies while holding this, you know, like, there's all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of know why Sadie's being a little distant, but Carter's noticing it and wants to figure out what's going on.
I love that he's like, she's not talking enough. Something's going on.
Sadie isn't jabbering in my ear every 5 seconds. Something must be happening. So yeah, he is not being very careful about his questions, and he is just lobbing things at her. And she is being very careful about her answers.
Yeah.
And so you can tell that Carter's glad he's getting some sort of answer, but she's also not giving him what he wants.
Yeah. But like, I mean, I think she says something about this in the last chapter where, like, she didn't really want to tell him what exactly was going on with the feather, probably because she doesn't want him to ask, like, very pointed questions that she can't get around. But at the same time, like, does she think that he's going to try to manipulate the truth out of her? Like, I feel like it's a little bit of a trust thing right now, is, like, she's not really willing to be vulnerable in front of him, even with the, like, trust that, okay, I promise I won't ask you. I mean, because she could just not answer, but I also feel like it kind of backs her into a little bit of a corner, and she's afraid of what Carter might do.
Well, and what would Carter think if he asks her a question and she tells him, I'm not answering it?
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Like, that just causes problems.
And sometimes that's the answer that you're like, okay, well, now I know the answer to this.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, we definitely can understand why Sadie's being a little distant, but Carter is just, having all kinds of problems with it. And Bast, meanwhile, is upset with herself for abandoning them in the land of the dead. She keeps going back to the promise she made their parents, and especially to protect Sadie. Carter is an also, he's an also protect on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Sadie is her priority one. And so it just worth noting that, like, Bast is really uncomfortable and unsettled with having to abandon them a couple of times throughout the story.
This was very much Chekhov's gun left on the table where everyone can see it, but
I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And she makes clear that Carter and Sadie are the only chance of reconciling the gods in the House of Life. So, like, she's going to do her best to get them where they need to be. She also makes it clear that she would be there with them even if she hadn't promised their parents.
Yeah.
And she refers to them as her kittens.
I really loved this part because, like, she very much admits, like, I was here in the beginning because of what your parents asked of me. But, like, now I'm in it for, like, us. Like, yeah. She's very much, I think, you know, she loves them. And I feel like for a god in particular, like, that is a very human thing to be expressing. And not something that we've really seen from a lot of gods in Rick's books. I mean, I think Poseidon is there sometimes because he's Percy's dad, and we get a little bit closer of a look. Maybe Athena sometimes, but, like, very much giving, you know, the gods that, the kind of humanity that comes with empathy is pretty rare.
But I think Bast is also probably a very well-positioned god to feel things like that because of the eternal battle that she's in, and, like, she feels her own mortality more heavily than I think any of the gods in any of her books.
And she's been living among humans for quite a while now. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Something that really stuck out to me, I feel like this is gonna come back to be important, Sadie's vision of Anubis does not match up to the version Bast or Carter describe. They both talk about how in every visual depiction of Anubis, he has the head of a jackal, and that is what he looks like. Like, there's no other options. And Sadie, you know, as we recall, he was a young, very attractive boy that she was definitely having some feels for.
Yeah.
So, interesting that Sadie, Isis, I don't know, because Isis is inside her body. If that has an effect on how she sees Anubis, I don't know. But worth noting, because I feel like that's going to come back to be important.
I don't remember, like, why this is the way it is, but I'm of two minds of it. Either this is another part of Sadie's, like, abilities, because remember, she was able to see, like, the cemetery when the others couldn't. So, like, is this her looking past that into, like, something else? Or was Anubis like, I ought to be hot for this girl. She's so pretty. Everyone else can see me as a jackal-headed person, but, like, I want her to think I'm cute. So,
see, I really hope it's one of those two things. For in my brain, I was thinking, like, something is going on here, because nobody else saw him in that form. So it may have been Anubis, but, like, was something else going on? Yeah. Was he being influenced by someone else? Was there some sort of extra magic going on, I think, is what my brain was saying. Like,
I kind of like your Isis theory, because Anubis says that, like, his mother gave him to Isis. So, like, there's definitely a connection between them. So maybe Isis being in Sadie's body, like, humanizes him quite literally.
Yeah.
More than it would for the others. But we really, I mean, we really don't know. They didn't really give us many hints as to what is actually going on.
This was kind of a passing thing. There was a there was a lot of that in this chapter.
Yeah.
Where they kind of mentioned something and then they steamroll right past it because they're still driving and this is going on. So, like, yeah, it just felt somewhat interesting, worth noting. Maybe it'll come back. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But wanted to make sure we mentioned it. Bast has an idea to get Set's secret name, but we get no details about it.
And every time, I gotta say, this is maybe pulling the curtain back a little bit, but sometimes when I write things, I'm like, I know this thing has to happen down the line. I just don't know how it's gonna happen yet. So, like, I'm gonna say, you know, we're gonna go here so that I can do a thing, but I'm not gonna tell you what that thing is yet because me as the author doesn't know what it is.
I haven't completely made up my mind yet. Yeah. So we're just gonna say that it's a secret.
Yeah, and I'm like, Rick, did you just not know what Bast plays? Was when you wrote this chapter, because he does wing it quite a bit.
Yes.
Like, we've learned that about him. He's a bit of a pantser. So I am just very curious if that was like, he's just like, I'll figure it out later.
Right. I mean, I get it. I definitely get it. It's like, I need to say that Bast has an idea, but I also don't need, like, to come up with the plan. They don't need to hear the whole plan right now. They just need to know Bast has an idea and that's basically where we're going next.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, Carter, after all of that, Carter says he needs a little alone time. So he goes to the RV's back porch, which is not a thing I realized was, like, common.
Yeah.
I've seen them. There's, like, a big camper world thing on Alexis, like, not too far from our house.
Oh, okay.
That we occasionally drive by, and some of them have little, like, decks, little porches on the end. But, like, I didn't, there's not enough room on there to do sword play.
Yeah.
So, This is funny to me that Carter is on the back porch of the RV while it's moving, even though you're not supposed to, and he's practicing getting his sword in and out of the duat, which is very smart.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he's taking the time to practice that sort of thing. It makes it much more usable.
Yeah, and also very good on Rick's part of, like, okay, while they're in motion, while there's, like, a little bit of downtime, show him practicing so that when he has these skills later, it still makes sense. But this doesn't also, like, take up a lot of room in the story. It's not, like, a training montage or anything.
No.
It's just when he has some time.
Right. He needs a little alone time. Why not practice with my sword? He also practices some moves and you know, gets a little more familiar with his sword.
I'm sorry, but that sounds like a euphemism. He needed a little alone time to practice with his sword.
It's an actual sword.
Yeah.
This is a middle grade sword.
Yeah.
Mind out of the romance gutter, Karen.
Sorry. I mean, he does, you know, envision Zia, so.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Horace, at one point, does interrupt Carter's practice with some tips and things he wants him to know about the work playing with his sword. God, now I'm just not going to stop hearing.
I know.
He also, Horace is being a little bit, what's the word?
Annoying?
Vague, I think, is the word I'm searching for. About these warnings. Like, he's just saying, like, something is coming. There's another challenge. There's something else you're going to have to do before set. But he's not giving any specifics at all.
Yeah.
So it's like, great. Thanks, Horace. Like, super helpful.
Also, very annoying that they can basically read the kids' minds, but it doesn't work in reverse.
No. That's super annoying.
Yeah.
That's super annoying. But while Horace and Carter are kind of in the middle of one of these communications, Zia kind of pops into Horace's place in his mind.
I think it was like a...
Because she
like
interrupts Horace.
Message.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
She interrupts Horace, but I couldn't tell if it was like a vision or, yeah, if it was like some sort of like visual message that he's seeing or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very undetermined in my brain. But Zia does pop in with a message. She warns Carter that there are 4 magicians total from the House of Life, including herself and Desjardins, that are in pursuit of him and Sadie, and that they know that Carter and Sadie are headed toward Phoenix. Desjardins believes that stopping Carter and Sadie from battling Set is the only way to restore the safeguards and to keep things the way it's been. The House of Life team is planning to split into 2, and they're going to attack Carter and Sadie from both sides in a hope to, like, to take them off guard. She's hoping that they can talk some sense into Desjardins. The magician that she's teamed with, Mel, she's hoping that if she can get some time with Mel, she can convince Mel that Carter and Sadie have a righteous plan and that this is the way to go. And Desjardins, you know, he's not wrong, but, like, what he's trying to do is just not going to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has some hope that Mel might be convincible, and if that is the case, then she might be able to work with them to convince Desjardins. She also says she has a message for Carter that she needs to deliver in person and asks him to meet, but they don't really get a chance. She kind of gives him a meeting place, and he says, Carter's not feeling it. He doesn't trust what's going on. He's not sure he trusts that what Sadie's telling him. He doesn't say he's going to be there. He doesn't say he's not going to be there. And then Zia ends the message, has to jump off really quick because someone's coming, but tells him not to trust Amos if he sees him.
Mm-hmm.
And then bounces.
Yeah. How do you feel about Zia and, like, her trustability at this point?
I mean, it's a little suspect. We know that she and Carter have, like, a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she wants to get him killed.
Right.
So, like, there is enough, there's that kind of trust where, like, well, she doesn't necessarily want me dead, so I can trust her this much. But at the same time, like, she's loyal to the House of Life. It's what she knows. It's, you know, it's her everything. So, like, I don't necessarily know if she's forced to choose between the House of Life or Carter and Sadie. Yeah. I don't know which way she would go.
Mm-hmm. I see her, like, if she does go against them, I see her much more as, like, not an evil person or anything, or, like, a bad guy, but just somebody who's misguided.
Yeah.
Or, like...
more, like, anti-hero kind of.
Yeah, and, like, territory. Has been manipulated and brainwashed by, you know, Desjardins and, like, what's going on with the House of Life, but... yeah, what did you think about the message about not to trust Amos, especially now knowing that he shows up at the end of the next chapter?
Right, yeah. The, by the way, don't trust Amos, and then she's gone?
Yeah.
Why? Like, what has gone on that you shouldn't trust Amos? Mm-hmm. What is Amos up to?
What does she know, and how does she know?
Right.
It? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions, and zero answers. Hey, sounds like a Rick book.
Yeah.
But yeah,
must
so
be a cliffhanger.
I was trying to bat around in my head, like, what would Amos be up to that he would be a danger to Carter and Sadie, that they shouldn't trust him? Like, I'm not sure about that. We know that they don't know Amos that well. Like, it's not like he's their most trusted confidant or anything,
yeah.
But he was close to their parents, so he's as close to them as they've gotten. So, like, yeah, it's a little... it could go either way for me. I'm not sure. And that brings us to our favorite lines and our favorite moments from this chapter. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was between Bast and Carter, and Bast is kind of going on, and she's like, well, if we don't have any more nasty surprises, and Carter's like, you mean like the kind we have every day? And she goes, yes, like those. And it's just like, okay, at least we're acknowledging that it keeps happening, and we're just choosing to be optimistic regardless of what the past has told us. Okay, I guess we're just going with it.
This is blind optimism at this point. We're not going to have any problems today. Just today.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Mine comes from Bast, and it's her talking to the siblings about, like, her mission. And she says, at first, I was protecting you two because I promised. Now, even if I hadn't promised, I would. You two are like kittens to me. I won't fail you again.
It was cute.
It's just so cute, and
yeah.
I love it so much. Okay, and what was your favorite moment?
Mine was the, I almost said phone call. It was not a phone call. The message from Zia, and specifically, like, even Zia reaching out, like, literally reaching out to Carter, like, maybe she was gonna, like, grasp his arm or hold his hand or something like that. I feel like she was... being very earnest, you know, don't know if she's misguided or not, but, like, she is at least trying to warn Carter of what's coming, and hopefully, like, even if she is ultimately on Desjardins' side, I don't think she wants this to go about the way he does.
Right.
And so I like that she's trying to talk to Carter.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it's smart that he's being a little bit cautious with her.
Absolutely. I agree. Mine was Sadie seeing a different appearance for Anubis. We've been through this in detail now, and now I think maybe you're right that it's more of like a, oh, they really like each other. And that makes me even more excited for that to be like a thing possibly in the future. But it just felt important that they like touched on it and then bounced away from it really quickly. It was like, I hope we get back to that at some point.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we move into chapter 30 entitled... Bast keeps a promise. Carter is wakened by Bast. They are, the RV is parked precariously on a mountain road, very high up. And it confused me a little bit at the beginning of this chapter because Bast says that this is the best spot to summon Nephthys, which is fine. But then she says that they have to descend from the mountaintop through all the desert animals, climate, all the threats, and avoid them all and get to the Rio Grande below. So why did we drive all the way into the mountain just to traverse the mountain and go down? Like, and Bast does mention, like, well, us cats, we like to be up high so that if we have to pounce. And I'm like, well, yeah, but why are we doing it this way? It did not make sense.
Yeah, I actually forgot that line was in here, and I chose something else as my favorite line, but I really liked that she was like, we like to be up high so we can pounce, because after owning a cat, like, you do realize they love, like, Callie loves being on top of her cat tower and lording over everybody. It's pretty much her favorite thing.
Oh, yes, definitely. as they descend and are getting nearer and nearer to the Rio Grande, Horace starts triggering to Carter that he's been there before, that this place feels familiar. And that's when Carter starts remembering when he was in his bar, he remembers seeing this vision of Horus's past. This is where Isis and Horus hid from Set. And it's also that same place where Carter sensed that darkness in the water all those chapters back.
Yeah.
So that bodes well. This is definitely not going to go wrong. And while since they're there now, Carter can sense that same something wrong in the water, but they need to be at the river to summon Nephthys. And Khufu is not a fan of this either. He keeps sniffing at the water and making that same, like, ah sound. So Khufu is not totally on this. And then, all of a sudden, Horus goes completely silent.
How convenient.
Right? The minute they may actually be able to be helpful,
yeah.
Horus will not answer Carter at all. So,
but, you know, when Carter didn't want all those tips for, you know, how to play with a sword, I'm sorry, you know, he just couldn't shut up. But right. Now,
all of a sudden, nothing.
Thanks,
zero
Horus.
Zilch. Isn't that just like the Greek gods do?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the minute they can be helpful, they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So Sadie must be the one to ask Nephthys to appear because she's Isis's sister, and that bond is going to draw Nephthys out. So Sadie touches the water, and she asks for Nephthys. Carter, at that exact moment, sees a family, like a Latino family crossing ahead from, like, Mexico to the United States, and they both kind of eye each other up a little bit and make the decision to, like, let the other go about their business, mm-hmm. which I definitely understand. Carter's got enough on his plate
yeah.
at the moment. He really doesn't need to be dealing with that, too, mm-hmm. and this family seems to be doing just fine. They don't seem to really need a ton of help at the moment, so, like, yeah.
I like that Rick put this in here, and obviously, like, even though, you know, we just said that this book was written 15 years ago at this point in 2010, and I still feel like this is an incredibly relevant conversation, maybe even more so now. It's more mainstream that people are talking about immigration and crossing the border and stuff, and I think that Carter's thoughts on, you know, I've heard about people doing this, but I've never seen it. And, like, I'm just gonna mind my own business because
yeah.
I don't know what they're going through or what they need or whatever. Like, I really liked that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, it's not, like, easy. Like, the Rio Grande is not, like, a tiny little stream.
Right.
Like, it's not an easy passage either. So, I did like the inclusion that there were other people present. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
just them. So Sadie can hear Nephthys replying, but can barely make it out. The first, like, thing she hears is, like, the word caged, but then her and Bast kind of reason away the word caged, and they think that Nephthys is being sheltered far away, and they're not really getting a full message, and they're trying and trying and trying to figure this out.
And the thing is, like, this is not being said to Sadie in English. That's
no.
why she's, like, a little confused about how
yes.
to translate that word exactly, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, thank you, yeah. And that's when Carter looks over and notices that the immigrant family is completely gone, but the water where they were standing is stirring. So he is not just going to stand by if this family is having trouble and is, like, drowning or something. So he goes into the water to look for them. Khufu's not a big fan, by the way. And just as he gets midstream, Khufu points out that the family is, like, hiding in the reeds. At that moment, Khufu finds them, and so Carter, like, is happy to know that they made it, that they were not the cause of the stirring in the water, but there's a massive crocodile that is what was stirring in the
mm-hmm.
water. So this whole scene is very well depicted. It's a crocodile attack. Like, there's nothing super relevant going on except that there's a giant-ass crocodile attacking Carter.
Yeah.
And there's more than one because Sadie gets clipped by one that's trying to attack Bast, and it knocks her out. She goes down cold. Mm-hmm. And while Sadie is knocked out cold, that's when Sobek appears in the middle of the water. Now, Sobek, in case you're not familiar, is a 20-foot tall creature with a human chest and arms, but light green skin, think alpha, waist wrapped in green armored, in like a green armored kilt. He has the head of a crocodile with tons of teeth and eyes that glisten with mucus.
Ew.
Black hair in plaits down to his shoulders, like braids, basically, mm-hmm. With bull's horns curving out from his head. He also sweats torrents of oil, like oily water, back into the river. And we find out later that that's, like, one of his godly powers.
Yeah, like he makes the rivers from the sweat.
Yeah, which is so gross.
That's disgusting.
And Carter was definitely like, yeah, I'm done with rivers.
Yeah, don't blame you.
So as Carter sees Sobek and knows that Sadie's behind him and needs to be protected, Horace advises Carter that standing up and showing strength to Sobek is the way to go. And he does just that. He kind of tries to stand tall and says some really witty, silly things at Sobek. And Sobek, you know, gets distracted, and Bass starts asking him, like, you know, why would you side with chaos? Why are you not siding with order and with our king? And Sobek gives a well, you know, thought out answer to, well, Set has all the power and all the followers, and Ra is basically gone, and who am I really following here? Mm-hmm. So of course I'm going with them. What do you mean? And so it's at that point that Sobek grabs Carter and drags him two-handed into the water. Carter thinks he's going to drown, but he's able to focus his power. He encases himself in that glowing form and is as large as Sobek, which scares him. And Carter is able to launch himself out of the water and onto the bank.
Yeah, this whole sequence between Carter and Horace was really interesting to me because Horace was just silent before mm-hmm. everything that was going on, even when Carter's, like, directly trying to get him to say something useful. And, I mean, part of me thinks maybe Horace was just concentrating and was, like, trying to read the situation because he knows a split second before that crocodile attacks what's going to happen. And Carter's able to launch himself, like, super high up in the air.
Yes.
Like, way more than he would normally be able to. And it saves his life. And then mm-hmm. he lands on the bank. And him, Horace, telling Carter, like, you know, show strength, don't back down, that sort of thing. I think that Horace kind of does the same thing that Isis did, in that she was like, let me just take over. Let me just, like, I'll drive the boat. You just sit back. I'll take care of this. And Carter's like, no, that's not how this works. And then he sort of still channels Horace's energy, but without crossing that line, which, again, can't be very easy to do. And yet both Horace and Bast tell Carter, don't let Sobek get a hold of you. And he does. And you think it's kind of over at that point. And then Carter's able to get out of it, which is really quite amazing.
Absolutely. Definitely. And I mean, and this whole time, Sadie's knocked out. Mm-hmm. Khufu's dragging her away to get her to safety. And Carter, you can tell, is thinking, like, I need to stay alive, but I also need to keep Sobek distracted so that they can get Sadie somewhere safe. So that I can, you know, finish off this monster guy and hopefully, you know, find out what's wrong and see if we can help her. So Sobek continues to attack and he hits Bast, who takes a hard hit on the ground, and her avatar flickers out completely.
Mm-hmm.
Carter gets thrown onto the bank and he's right next to Khufu and Sadie. So Bast is kind of a little further away. Her avatar, like, the light of her avatar is gone. And she wakes up, turns back and looks to them and says, run. Like, just protect Sadie, run, go. And she jumps back into the fight, even though it is clear she's dangerously low in power. She attacks Sobek. She gets dragged under the water, but she manages to defeat him.
I kind of wish we had seen what had happened.
I know.
It was, like, I don't want to say anticlimactic, but after, like, how much struggle there was for it to just, like, happen under the water was like, oh, man.
And also, like, she's a cat goddess who hates water, so, like...
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What exactly happened that she was able to defeat Sobek? But she does manage to, and then a small gold and black cat shoots out of the river, and Carter catches it, but the talisman of the goddess literally crumbles to dust as he, you know, as it touches his hand, mm-hmm. and Bast is gone.
This was a little sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we kind of already know the answer to this a little bit, just because it's, like, a Rick book, but, like, do you think Bast is gone?
No.
But how is she going to come back?
Exactly.
Is the big question.
My guess, my hope, is that when things are set right at the end of all of this, when they are, you know, whether they're able to actually control Set or, you know, whatever, that Bast will either be rewarded for her bravery with more life, with extended life, with her power back, or she will be revived somehow, mm-hmm. like, you know, because of everything that's going on, the power. Yeah.
We know that, you know, they do regenerate, like,
yes.
gods and monsters and all of that.
Yeah.
They keep coming back.
It just probably wouldn't be in Carter and Sadie's lifetime. She
yeah,
would not,
I mean,
you know, if she was left
time.
To regenerate on her own, Bast probably would not be back while they are alive.
Mm-hmm.
At least as far as we know. okay, so Bast is gone. Carter, Sadie, Khufu are on the shore with a little kitten. And there are still two creatures coming in hot down the river. Neither one of them is Sobek, but they definitely have, like, that evil crocodile kind of shape. And so Carter is trying to figure out what their next move is. And he tells Khufu and Sadie to run, but is cut off as he turns to stare at them. And a white crocodile is standing behind them, staring back at him. And he quickly remembers and is like, wait. Are you Philip? Is that Philip? And Amos answers, yes. Philip lunges at the green crocs that are still coming in and basically protects them. Uncle Amos is there. He says he's checking on Sadie, tending to Sadie, and he tells Carter and everyone else to follow him and that they have a slim chance at survival.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think about Zia having just said, don't
right.
trust Amos, and now all of a sudden Amos is there.
Also, what fortuitous timing.
Yeah.
That he arrives just as Bast is killed and their last protector is gone, and now all of a sudden Philip and Amos just happen to arrive in the nick of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It definitely feels a little sus, and I think Carter feels that too. Like, as happy as he was to see Philip, and as happy as, you know, it's Amos. Like, as happy as he is to see him, like, he's a little suspect of, like, how this is all going down. I am glad that Zia was able to warn him, because at least he's got his antenna up, and he's, like, aware that something might be amiss with Amos. But yeah, that is the chapter. So, I guess we still have to do favorite lines and favorite moments. So, Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was, I'm pretty sure Horace tells Carter, like, take out your wand or whatever. And Carter, like, throws, like, I think Horace is trying to tell him what to do with it. And Carter just throws it at the crocodile. And Horace goes, or you could smack it with a stick. And that was pretty funny.
Agreed. Mine was also kind of from that same moment. And Carter is talking to Sobek, and he uses the word destroy. Like, I will destroy you. And Horace says, good. Destroy is good.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's pretty funny, actually. Okay, and what was your favorite moment?
Mine was Carter channeling the power of Horace and kicking Sobek's butt instead of letting Horace take over. I think it took a lot of strength, a lot of confidence in himself. And also, he'd been struggling for the last several chapters. Sadie's been doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And I feel like this really was Carter's time to shine, and he did very well. Ultimately, Bast was the one who defeated Sobek, but Carter held his own for quite a while.
Definitely. Mine was Bast kind of being ready to make the ultimate sacrifice for them. Mostly because she was literally just talking about how upset she was about having to abandon them. So, like,
again, we saw that coming.
This, as much as I didn't want it to happen, is, like, almost destined to happen. Yeah. Like, the kids have to kind of be on their own. They've had Bast as their protector this whole time. In order for them to really kind of embrace their power, they're going to need to be on their own at some point. So, as much as I didn't want it to happen, I expected Bast to, at some point, either be imprisoned or killed or something. And so, this doesn't shock me, but I am really sad that she's gone.
Yeah.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Apple, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is always super wonderful. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for content or episodes you want to hear from us. We don't really have any feedback this week. We will definitely be on the lookout for next week. So if you have any questions or anything based on any of the chaos that's been going on in our lives with vacations or whatnot, we are more than happy to hear from you in any of those places. Next time, we will be talking about the Red Pyramid, chapters 31 and 32. I did not look. There are 2 more chapters, right?
Yeah, I think it's, like, almost up to 40.
I think I assumed that we have two more chapters. I'm reading the ebook, so it's not, like, right in front of me that there's definitely, you know, 100 pages left or something.
41 chapters is what we'll end at.
So, yes, next time, chapters 31 and 32, and you can probably expect that about on time in the next 2 weeks or so, so we should be, hopefully, back on some sort of schedule for a while. We'll see. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.